This is a great intro. Go. I want you, come on, say what you're going to say.
Well, all I was going to say was sometimes things just sound different than they actually are.
Why?
So to clarify what the hell a shore house was, I've literally never heard somebody refer to a beach house. It's a beach house.
You ever heard of a beach? You ever heard of a beach house?
I've heard of a beach house. I've heard of a lakefront house. I've heard of all these
beach,
things.
Beach house, beach house and shore house are the same thing. They're the same exact thing.
Okay, perfect. I just needed to confirm that a shore house was a house on the shore of a lake or the ocean or something.
Listen,
you guys also wear shoes in the house, and we don't, okay? I wear slippers.
The shoes thing is weird.
Okay,
I don't got no shoes on. Not in my own house. Hell no. Dude, I'm a
fan. The first time I seen it, my parents have a rental property in Phoenix, and like they have cameras in the house and stuff, and these people are just walking all through the house in fucking shoes, and it's like,
I don't know anybody that walks around in shoes.
This is a living house?
Like, oh, yes, Anthony. Every time I've been to the U.S., especially the southern U.S., everybody leaves their shoes on. When I just went to Houston, you do not take your shoes off. And I think it's weird as hell. I would have got beaten.
I take my shoes off. I take my shoes off.
A lot of people in Florida, Phoenix.
Yeah, Texas.
Okay, they're not me, so I'm good. So like I was saying, I'm gonna have a little fun bodybuilding. And so that's probably gonna start before I go on this vacation. So I'm just gonna show up to this vacation like 200 pounds and fucking jacked as fuck. my family's gonna be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What the fuck happened to you? And I'm like, I ate my spinach. That's what I did.
And then you're about to have the funnest conversation of your life.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have a great combo. Absolutely.
100%. You should just do like the Hollywood thing where you're like, you know, I ate chicken breasts like 5 times a day. I did HIIT in the morning. I did breathing and techniques. Just start naming everything.
Well, you could also approach it. You want to know the way I approach explaining that I do steroids to my parents?
Oh, God.
I did.
We might have just doing this topic today.
Well, I just got asked. I simply got asked, and my dad said, are you using steroids? And he had asked me before, and I had said no. And then finally he asked me again, and I said, Dad, I'm 247 pounds. I have abs still. I used to be 180 pounds. I think you can answer that question yourself.
One plus one.
That was the extent of that conversation, and then it was you just be safe and I literally said you can say what you want, but like it's not stopping me. So
one plus one equals two. There, 1 + 1. Yeah. But yeah, so I get to go on this vacation, so I'm hopefully gonna be jacked as fuck when I get on this vacation because I'm not trying to be just a pale white 180 pound ghost anymore.
How long will your exposure have been when that vacation comes around?
I don't know. Whenever my fat loss phase ends, I'll update.
Okay.
Well, no. Hopefully a few months in so I get some of the effects. But good update, prep update. Not prep update. I'm not in prep. No, people don't ask me if I'm in prep. I'm not in prep. Fat loss phase update. I've dropped like another 4 pounds. I decided to walk like 12,000 steps yesterday. And my normal's like 9. And I was just like walking around my apartment yesterday, like pacing. And I guess I just, my body just being like, oh yeah, we're going to drop another 2 pounds for you. So now I'm down to like 181 and a half today. Feeling lean. My blood glucose is still through the roof. So that's not improving anytime soon, apparently, which is great.
What is it?
What
is it?
I hit 97 today. So whatever, like a 5.2. Probably somewhere around there, I would assume. Maybe. Who knows?
You've had some stressors.
Yeah, mental stressors. But no, I'm feeling good.
Absolutely
freaking smoked PRs on legs. I mean, I did lower the weight on my pendulum, but I sent you boys my pendulum set, and I can guarantee you I got a lot more activation out of that than my 3 plates for 21 repper that I did last week, which I don't have proof of. Because And the boys are upset that I didn't have proof of this. It was like a 3-minute set. Rather not have record. I didn't have a phone with space at that time. Okay. Now I have a phone with 512 fucking gigabytes. So I will never run out of space. So I can see any WhatsApp video. I can record any video I want and I will be good. HD cameras. It makes my body look like shit though. So I need to bring back my old. I look better on check-ins. Give me the shit. Throw it back to like the 90s bodybuilding when you would look good from like really shitty videotape. That's what I need with my phone and my check-in pictures. So I don't look like shit.
There you go.
So my week's been good. You know, I can't complain. There's a few things could be better, but you know, move on. The ship rolls forward. Braden, how was your week?
Week was great, man. Just busy as per usual. Now on the flip side, it was not so great in the sense that when I got, I guess we filmed our last episode on Sunday, felt a little off Monday and was a scheduled rest day. And then Monday I did train. And then Tuesday I woke up sick as fuck. So that sucked. And I don't get sick often. But yeah, rocked me pretty good. And Cam had sent me my stuff there on Sunday. So we were getting rolling and weight was kind of hanging around the 213 mark where it was steadily at. And then through the week, it just dropped and dropped and dropped and dropped. I woke up at 205.6 or something yesterday, which is tough to see, but it is what it is. I know I took pictures this morning and sent them off to Cam and I just looked flat and whatnot and it'll come back as soon as I get to training. So I'm not worried about it. It's practicing what I preach though. I'm sick and I'm not training and you shouldn't if you train.
But you
kind of put a damper in things. Yeah. What's that?
But you did get your pieces in for the gym.
Yes, I did. That was the exciting part of my week. It definitely got my activity level up when I probably should have been resting a little bit more, but hauling boxes around and unpacking stuff, which I was super excited for. So everything should be finalized. There's one piece in the leg press that was kind of weird. So they had to send me a new piece for it. So that'll be here Tuesday. Then everything will be slapped together. And based on the progressions and how I'm feeling now, I'm assuming I'll probably be back to train by like Wednesday or so. So looking forward to that and getting things rolling. But yeah, other than that, it was good. I went and looked at a property for potential things we got rolling, which was kind of cool. And then I just got a couple new athletes. I had a couple athletes who I prepped last year, and they did very, very well in their shows. One of them got second at the national level. And after that, he's a very avid snowmobiler and stuff. So he needed some time away to focus on his passion with that. And they actually both reached out on the same day to get fired up again because they miss it and are ready to get serious with things again. So I was really excited to get working with them and I took over another athlete to prep. So things are rolling. I'm excited, super busy, but always good things.
Dylan, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. I actually, unlike you, I was in the reverse where I feel like I aged about a year in the last 3 months or so. But I had the reverse of some drop-offs of stress. Just some things kind of became clear, I guess, that I've been focusing on for some time. So feeling good that way. I actually got a couple of great athletes also just in the last couple of weeks here. So it's been really fun to kind of work with them. And I've upgraded a lot of my systems and that's kind of done now. Like I kind of have all my new setups, the sales process and the back end with like the T Miller stuff. And then I have my front end stuff that like between me and the consumer, I have that. Those systems are really upgraded. So, but when something is new, it's stressful, you know, because I was used to being able to get a client something in like X amount of time. And then that time tripled or quadrupled because I wasn't used to the systems, but now I've done it enough with the new office being pretty much set up now. It's nice. So anyway, week's good, man. I was excited to do this podcast and talk to you guys.
Always the time.
Always the
but we're not being fat boys today.
We're not. No, we're not.
Hey,
we're
actually, you guys would be proud of me. Yesterday,
You're no longer a fat boy though, because you lost like 8. You lost like 10 pounds this week. So,
it'll be back on here in a couple of days, and I'll be a fat boy again. But actually, yesterday I gave up a very good fat boy situation, and it was a tough one for me. Yesterday, think about this. I woke up 205.6 yesterday, and my wife rolls downstairs and goes, as I'm finishing packing equipment, and goes, and I was already a little bit behind on meals.
Oh God.
And she opens the door and goes, hey babe, I'm going to order sushi. Did you want to do sushi tonight? And oh man, did I ever want to, oh my God, did I ever want to, but I said no, and I deserve a gold star. As much as we don't give people gold stars for not doing what they just should have been doing, I deserve a fucking gold star.
Here, I'll give you one of these. There you go.
There we go. I like the clap. I
no
like
one can
clap.
See that. No one can see that on. No one can see that because we're on the video. But there's a clap sign going on right now.
But if you know me and you know how much I love my sushi, it broke my heart a little bit, honestly.
Oh no, I go Five Guys over sushi though.
Oh, that's insanity. I do like my Five Guys now, as we know, as for our first Fat Boys episode. But sushi is for sure the king. And you know what really ran through my head here when I said no? I said, my Fat Boys are really going to be upset at me. I let them down today. But on the flip side, I'm glad I made the right decision.
You could tell this was such a mental struggle for you. Like this is the one mental struggle of the week. It's not that I'm sick. Yeah. It's that I want to have sushi.
The fact I said no.
That's pretty good.
She was probably distraught. She's probably like, wow, he's a few meals behind and he still said no.
But quite frankly, here's actually a valuable point from this. And I thought about this and I talked to Kim about this and I missed this. When you're self-coaching and you don't have a strategic goal or kind of an end goal in mind, it is really fucking easy for you to justify those things, right? Like it would have been really easy for me to sit there and say, you know what? I can order a normal amount of sushi and not go full Fat Boy mode. And I can make sure it's not putting me over my daily caloric needs, but also just enjoy it. Whereas I've told you guys this before, when I'm actually have somebody doing my stuff and I'm now somebody's athletes, much like you guys, like I just execute, right? And that's what I like about it. And I have somebody holding me accountable. Like I guarantee you, if I probably checked in with Cameron this morning in week one, when I have not yet trained and I tell him, yeah, man, I went in on some sushi last night, what would be going through his mind? This guy's a fucking quack. He's going to be the worst athlete ever. Right. And like at the end of the day, just having that accountability of having a coach is a huge thing for me. Cause I guarantee you previously self-coaching, I probably would have looked at him and been like, yeah, 100% get me this. And although it's a smart decision in the sense that I'd fit it into my foods or whatever, it's also not a smart decision.
Yeah. You know what? My body, I'm really happy that my body's working with me because I haven't had to add in any cardio yet. I haven't had to do anything. I mean, I'm down now. If I look at where I was started at 198.6 and now I'm at 181.6. So I'll take 17 pounds,
no cardio,
Just pulling a ton of food. So it's just, you know, I take it. My digestion's the best it's ever been. I did
go from being a fat boy to not a fat boy.
Yeah. Now I'm a skinny fat boy. That's I'm not even just fat. I'm not even just thick anymore. I'm just all my XL shirts that fit pretty snug in the off season are now starting to get a lot looser. So I'm starting to basically wear body bags as my shirts now. But I also started implementing stretching the last few days. My massage therapist got really on me about some of my muscles and about my hamstrings and my back and my rhomboids. And so she sent me like these spinal twists.
My entire body.
Yeah. She's like, your entire body is just fucked. And I'm like, thanks. No, but it's mainly my posterior. That's actually the really bad, besides my chest, because I sit here at the desk all day and I'm like leaning over, like hunched over on my keyboard. So started doing that. And I feel absolutely phenomenal these past few days. Like just being able to, I feel released. It's definitely really hard. If people say stretching and things is not hard, they're not doing it right. I don't know about you guys, if you guys do any of that, but when you really start to stretch correctly, it fucking sucks. Like absolutely burns. And I'm kind of happy though, cause I need my hamstrings to get really looser, because I truly think it's from probably pulling twice per week. So we'll see. we'll see how that goes. And you know, hopefully we'll get some benefit from it. So hopefully next time I go see her, I won't be in as much pain, because she won't have to release as much. So, yeah. So boys, we set up nutrition talk today. We can decide how we want to go with this. Who wants to decide? Do we decide? We'll just go with nutrient timing.
Yeah, let's
just shoot. Yeah, I thought that's what we were doing. I'm all good with whatever though. We'll fire up there, man.
honestly, the other topic will actually fit into it because it will match in with nutrient timing per se and why we like to protocol the way we like to protocol here.
Sure.
But we're going to discuss, say, nutrient timing and a little bit of carb cycling and how they kind of go together. I think this would be really good for people. Really great introduction to what we want to do. So for people who are listening to this episode, we want to give more value to you guys. We don't just want to be here, like, as much as we love doing just the Fat Boy combos and the Q&As, we also want to have an episode where we dedicate to you guys. So you guys have questions. The questions are for the Q&As, but you can give us a topic that we will dive into. Obviously, we're going to ask these more ahead of time, so we have so we're not trying to just shoot from the hip, because as much as we love shooting from the hip, we want to make sure that we have some knowledge background, some good points that we could bring up, and we have some research or whatever that we can find to help you guys. So if we ever do have any research and things like that, we will put it down in the show notes for you guys. So if we ever bring up any PubMed studies or anything like that, they will be available for you down below to read.
Ooh, I could probably.
This is something that I thought we brought it up. We'll also share this. I think it's important because our listeners are pretty loyal, and we've all started to recognize that. And I think bringing Braden into this addition of fun has been just a great, added value. And plus, we're all close, so it's great. And I started to notice, to be completely transparent, I got a client, both mentorship and, athlete. Basically directly from the podcast. And that's when it kind of woke me up. I was like, hey guys, maybe that I shouldn't just smoke like 2 grams of cannabis before we do this. Like maybe we should try pay attention a little bit more, let's say, than we do, and I said, but like, I think there is some value to having that aspect. Cause I think people do like the fly on the wall aspect, so to speak. And, but I said, maybe we should introduce something more of like, where we have a topic that we've, I don't want to say research because that sounds providing a valuable topic that people can take. I know a lot of athletes and coaches listen to this, so it's going to give them something that three coaches are breaking down their perspective on a topic, and they can go deploy that how they see fit. So I think there's going to be a lot of value there. So if we haven't been providing that, we recognize that it's a hole and we're filling it.
Yeah. So
and that's, I think that's not to say that we won't have educational pieces and value to be taken away from some of our other episodes. This will just be dictated towards a certain topic, like today's nutrient timing. And then obviously, again, the other ones, we've been having fun with them and just chatting, and wherever the conversation goes, it goes. And if it's educational pieces, great. And if it's not, well, awesome. Well, we had fun, but this will be fun and direct information.
So who wants to kick this off? I don't know if I want to kick this off. Someone else.
Well, I think if we're talking nutrient timing, one of the most important things to talk about is what are we even talking about, right? Yeah. Like, are we talking about meal frequency and does nutrient timing matter in the sense of when you're eating your meals, how many meals you're eating? Are you intermittent fasting, having one meal a day versus having 6 meals a day, right? That's essentially what nutrient timing is. And then you could take it even to a more level in terms of putting foods within a certain meal at a certain time or certain nutrients within a meal at a certain time. But I think that's a great place to start. It is what exactly is nutrient timing as a whole?
Yeah. I think for me, I mean, at least the way that I like to define nutrient timing, at least for my clients, is what does each meal kind of contain macro wise and why we bias those certain things. And then what are we having in the other meals per se outside of things? So we're talking about meals surrounding the peri-workout window, basically. So your pre, intra, and post. And then we talk about the meals outside of that. That includes also rest days too, as well. That's how I kind of take it and how And meal frequency is involved in that, right? So, you know, we'll touch on that in a second. But I think the most important factor of this is I really think is the composition of your macros in a specific in meals. Now, I say that because just from anecdotal experience, I've seen better nutrient partitioning. I've seen better body composition from being able to push more carbs through that peri-workout window and less in rest days and less in those meals outside of it and push more fats, bias more fats that way. And you look at what works, right? And this is where we kind of get in these habits. A lot of people, I mean, majority of my clients, I always use carb cycling to truly be honest. I just find the benefits outweigh it. So nutrient timing in and of itself for me, at least I would define it as what meals, what macros are being biased in which meals and how are we going about figuring out the food sources within those to even express that advantage even more, if I explain that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. Obviously, like, I think once you dive into that further, there's way more to dig into around peri-workout nutrition, timing nutrients around certain times of the day or activity levels and stuff, but that's exactly what it is. So I got nothing to add to that.
No, same. That's a pretty standard definition that I would similarly use with my clients to make it simple, but I very rare would I start getting into with a client about like micronutrient timing, et cetera.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Yep.
And, you know, we can pull that apart, but I just don't know the utility in it because I don't think that that's very usable for most people. I think we should stick to macronutrients per meal and why, and then maybe training days and non-training days if there's a difference or why, or just a cycling in general of nutrients.
I think the only time, and this is something I actually was putting some thought to, is in terms of the micronutrient sense that you're mentioning would be like oxidative stress and trying to limit that with supplements around the training window type thing. But that's, again, we're not talking foods in that sense, right? We're talking about like fucking super dosing curcumin before you go train. Like,
yeah,
things you don't want to do in a sense, right?
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And by the way, I'm for that specificity as a whole. It's just that it's a long rabbit because like,
yeah, you guys know I agree.
I eat at the times that I eat it, though. That's for a reason. It's not for nothing that I love anecdote and playing, but I don't think that's helpful for a lot of people.
No, it's not. I agree. And that's why that's what I was trying to say is we don't need to get into that.
Okay.
We'll stick with the foods and stick with timing of those things rather than get into micros. Cause we'll be here for 4 episodes.
Take these vitamins with meal one. That's what I say to people. I'm just like, take these with this meal and take these with that meal. And then that's it.
Well, and it is, I mean, yeah, I'm just going to leave that there because you can get into the actual percentage is going to make somebody better splitting it between meal one and meal five or just having it at meal one. I don't know. Right? Like,
it's not the biggest domino to knock down for the entire.
Yeah, life. Exactly.
So with nutrient timing specifically, thinking about how you would structure your meals in a day. So let's start there. We can specify that. So like, Braden, how would you like it? Let's say using a client that is, maybe a amateur competitor wants to improve, but also isn't, let's say, hell-bent on getting a pro card, et cetera. They have a life and things that they have to manage. How would you like to see someone set their nutrition up in a day, or how would you set it up? Excuse me, is it probably a better question?
Okay, so I'll give two scenarios based on two different schedules for the day. Sure. So, for instance, if this individual is somebody who works at 7 a.m. and they're training before work, so they're training from 5 till 6:30 or whatever. We'll just put some arbitrary numbers out there. Times out
perfect
there.
Perfect example, by the way, because this is a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So in this sense, there's a few things that are very, very important. And I've mentioned this before on some of my own posts and stuff. The most important thing, I mean, you just didn't consume any water or anything. So the most important thing you're going to need to do the second you wake up is hydrate, because injuries come from dehydration. Over and over again, most people that get injuries or muscle tears or anything, dehydration. Muscular performance runs on hydration and electrolytes, right? Like these are all things we need. So primary focus is going to be getting fluids in. Now, what's a kind of a really good way to do that as well as get nutrients in you that are going to be great around training? Well, I still in myself would have somebody wake up and drink about a liter of water. But another really good solution to this is not only you do that, but your pre-training meal is a very digestible fuel source that's high in carbohydrates because, again, you've just fasted, assuming you sleep for your 8 hours, for probably 9 hours because you weren't eating while you were in bed. So probably around 9 hours. First thing you're going to want is actually an energy substrate to drive the training, meaning carbohydrates. So now let's look at some good fast absorbing carbohydrates to generate fuel for that training window. You got Gatorade, awesome, checks all the boxes because you also have electrolytes in it and sodium, potassium, you name it, very, very important for muscular contractions. You have clustered dextrin or HBCD. Now on the flip side, something I really, really like around the training window, and I'm pretty sure I have almost all of my athletes do this, whether they train any time of the day, some sort of fruit. Reason being, and fruit juice and actual fruit juice will do this too, but the fructose, right? It's going to refill liver glycogen stores very, very quick. So you get that from the fructose. You get a type of glucose from a different energy source. Now, again, do you want to eat oatmeal? No, absolutely not. We're talking about digestion because we're also talking about performance driving progress, right? Now, if you sit there and eat a giant thing of oatmeal that's going to sit in your stomach, first of all, you might be a person that doesn't feel bloated or full from oatmeal, but I can promise you, you are not actually digesting those nutrients fast enough to get the benefit from the carbohydrates an hour after you ingest it when you just wake up in the morning. So going with something like a banana and some clustered dextrin and a fast absorbing protein like a hydrolyzed whey isolate or a hydrolyzed casein or something like that is going to be very, very beneficial. And then these individuals, I would also continue that nutrition into their workout. So they might be waking up and having, like I said, a banana or orange juice with some Gatorade or clustered dextrin and a whey protein source. Now they're training, they're going to be having 15, 20 grams of EAAs. Maybe if they're a smaller athlete or a smaller female, 10 grams of EAAs. Clustered dextrin, again, it's literally designed to have the molecular weight of a carbohydrate that we want, very fast absorbing and very fast utilized. And then again, we're going to talk about, okay, vasodilation. So citrulline, glycerol, things like this, right? Hydrate the muscle again with the glycerol. Sodium for pumps, very, very important. Okay, so we got pre-training window. We got intra-workout there. Cluster dextrin, like I said, would be in there. Now we talk post-workout. Big one for me, everybody thinks there's this fucking magical anabolic window where you get out of the gym, you have 15 minutes to have a shake and carbs and this and that. I personally don't agree because if you're somebody who does things properly, you probably should be having some sort of intra-workout nutrition, which puts you in a position where you aren't fasted for 3 hours between when you start training and finish training and get home to make a meal. You're not fasted. You just had a meal essentially while you were training. You might've just had literally 20 grams of carbs from or protein from an amino acid essentially, and 50 grams of carbs. Maybe you have some coconut water with 10 to 15 grams of carbs in it as well. A lot of times I actually do include this in an intra-workout for individuals for the electrolytes again. But getting out of the gym and banging a protein shake is not going to be super beneficial. I mean, it's not going to hurt you, but it's definitely not needed. So giving yourself an opportunity to get into a parasympathetic existence per se, where you're actually letting your CNS settle down. Maybe you listen to some calming music on the way home from the gym, or you just have a warm shower and give yourself, maybe you just don't go right into something that's not going to benefit your parasympathetic activity. This is another reason why I like to use Revive Calm in these situations and have individuals take Calm post-training. It's going to help bring us into that parasympathetic state, right? And then post-training again, you want easily digestible food sources and you want to be able to drive and put a good amount of nutrients in. And so we're talking, I don't usually like fats in the pre or post-workout window, because what do fats do? They slow down absorption of other nutrients, right? So it's going to slow down the absorption of protein, slow down the absorption of carbohydrates. So post-training again, I do like to utilize a high carb, high protein meal. This individual, because they had a liquid meal first, they very well might be starving. So based on the individual, I'll kind of see, and it might be a cream of rice, honey, and whey isolate meal. Or if there's somebody who's extremely, extremely hungry and has a big appetite and will eat big throughout the day, I literally might hit them with something like chicken, rice, and pineapple, because the volume of that meal is going to be a little bigger than something like cream of rice that's going to go through you really quick, right? So that's morning training. Main focus kind of around lowering the fiber, because we don't want to slow down the digestion of things. High carbohydrate, energy substrate that's going to drive performance. And protein, obviously, muscle protein synthesis is very, very important for building muscle, especially if we're talking an amateur bodybuilder or whatever. Same idea in the post-workout window. Now you go through the day, and this is where an individual's feedback is going to become important. If this individual is somebody who tends to have highly trending blood glucose levels, well, a lot of their carbohydrates during the day are probably going to sit within that window of training. Maybe the meal three might have a little bit of carbohydrates here and there, but outside of that, I'll probably, the energy substrates I'm going to use for fueling this person is more so going to be biased towards fats and proteins, right? Because again, at the end of the day, if their glucose levels are just sitting high and high and high, well, now we're talking about insulin resistance, and we're feeding into it more by driving further carbohydrate intake throughout later parts of the day. So I won't rant more about that. Flip the scenario. Somebody trains in the evening. Well, now we have the ability to get fuel in during the day. I still probably going to bias a large, large chunk of their most easily applied fuel source, so carbohydrates, for energy around training. So same idea. But now, instead of hitting that cream of rice or something post-workout, I'm probably going to program that pre-workout. Or there's things, depending on the person, if they can handle gluten and whatnot, we'll drive English muffins pre-training, or bagels with a banana, maybe some jam, some fruit juice. Again, person to person, going to be based on personal preference, right? And in that situation, a lot of the times I may even, again, if their blood glucose tends to be on the higher end, I'll probably have them early in the day, especially if they sit at like an office job type thing or something, mostly sit around with their meals are going to be protein, fat. Right? Like they might have a large amount of eggs in the morning, and then maybe a steak variation with some coconut oil in meal two. And then as we get towards that training window in the evening, we may uptake carbohydrates a little bit. But again, person to person, right? Because I do have also athletes who are 280 pounds and eat 6,000 calories a day. And when they wake up in the morning, they're eating three bagels and 200 grams of blueberries. Right. And that's just one of those things. But then it also comes back to the conversation, which we could go down another fucking rabbit hole, and the application of insulin and stuff in those scenarios, because you have to drive so much nutrients in such a large individual that there needs to be some sort of support on the body, because that's a lot of stress on the pancreas. Right. So that's, again, me kind of going on a tangent, but in terms of just how I would set things up, large chunk of carbohydrates around training, easily digestible sources, low in fiber, not high in fat. Some people, though, again, a perfect example is my 280-pound bodybuilder I was just speaking about, who has a massive breakfast and massive meals all throughout the day. If I do not put carbohydrates in his pre-workout meal and he trains in the evening, he goes hypo. If I don't put fats, he goes hypo. And I'm talking, I will literally put 150 grams of carbs, 200 grams of carbs in his pre-workout meal, and he'll be hypo halfway through. So I have to give him coconut oil or almond butter or something, even when he's in the peak of his off season, to make sure he's not bottoming out his blood sugars in the middle of a training session. Right. So yeah, that's kind of my take around it. How about you guys?
So if I could throw in a caveat here that I like to program morning workouts a little bit differently. So I like to even start the night before. So I load them
huge time.
So I load them. So I load them heavy the night before, not too heavy, but I'll take probably like 70, 80 grams of carbs, something like that. Just depends on the person, obviously. But I'll take a good chunk of their carbs during their rest day. If it's a rest day going into a training day, I'll take that going into there. Or if it's a rest day, well, typically their training will be the next morning anyway. So, I will kind of structure their nutrition to have a larger meal before bed, which will be typically what you said to avoid in the morning, which would be something like an oatmeal or something that is going to be slower digesting when it comes down to it. Then
can I add one piece here, or maybe ask you guys a question? Cause it's an observation I've had. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever, cause I do the same thing with my, I didn't mention that, but I do the same thing. And I think it's a very, very important idea. Now, when you do that, do you ever put like berries in in the evening before bed? Do you ever notice the correlation between improved sleep and berries, like blueberries or blackberries in the evening?
So let's just say I've run that in. Ever since I've kind of learned it. So Tom actually taught me this one. He taught me why it's because it does, because your liver can dump during the middle of the night.
Yeah.
There's a thing. So the fact that you're getting those berries is you're fueling your liver. Refilling those stores there. So you're going to get a bit deeper sleep when it comes down to it. So I personally, with every single client, like to do around maybe 80 to 100 grams of berries, at least in their final workout and like their final meal, just from a perspective of that sleep there. And typically I am a person that will do berries peri-workout anyway. I prefer them, and a lot of people actually like them. But I tell people to kind of find fruits to where they are. So to answer that question before I dive into my kind of way of setting up things, my answer is yes.
Yeah, it's just something I've never dove into the actual like scientific application behind it. I've just seen it many times, and I first figured it out with myself. I have better quality sleep when I have berries before bed. And then I can see Dylan grinning over here. He has something he wants to add to this, and I'm
Dylan has something
it way I'm ready for it. But it's one of those things where, right, it's, talk about a dart that you throw. I literally did it myself, and I'm very self-aware. So I was like, wow, I sleep better if I have berries before bed. And then I was just like, oh, fuck, I'm going to try it here. And then you kind of ask questions and guiding questions, right? You don't want to be like straight up, hey, so I gave you berries before bed. They're going to make you sleep better. Did they make you sleep better? Everyone's going to respond yes, right? Now it's just like figuring things out, applying, and then, hey, my sleep improved a little bit. It's like, okay, maybe I can try this again. And I just, it was one of those things for me that I figured that I found kind of works.
Yeah. The only thing I had to add to that was like, I think, you know, who you're asking that question to. So it's like the depths of which animal products and fruit should be included in our diet is very evidently apparent. And I can go back very far if you want to get into that. So when I hear that, it's like, well, imagine that. You ate something you were designed to eat, and it worked really well.
That's honestly, and like, that's about as scientific as
it
I
just,
can get.
It just, this is one where Dylan's like, it just works. Just,
yeah, like,
there's no.
You're here because it works. Enough.
No, and I completely agree with it, because I don't foresee a need. It's one of those things where I'm like, I don't need to understand why it works. Like literally it doesn't fucking matter why it works. I just know that it works. And if somebody, I'm going to do it. I'm going to program berries potentially before bed, unless there's somebody that I know has really bad blood glucose issues and I want like whatever, but it's one of those things where I don't need to know why, but exactly. I've seen Dylan smirking and I'm like, you know what? That's actually the explanation that I would essentially have too, that you are meant to eat fucking fruit. So eat your fruit.
Yeah. So literally for bodybuilding, I started telling all of my clients, I said, look, don't live and die by this sword. It's nothing like this. But when I started getting clientele again, I said, try and move most of your carbohydrates around your training. And also try and eat as much of your macros that you can get from animal byproducts, preferably high quality ones, and fruit. And then preface your fast digesting starches, HBCDs and stuff. That's around your training. I also like to add one thing to that where I think it's important to add, and I don't know if you guys disagree or agree with this, I almost never also do no fat. So like I have seen clients, if you let them kind of go like on their own or maybe just coaching protocols, it's like zero fat pre with this morning client specifically, zero fat pre, kind of zero fat intro with the EAAs, et cetera, et cetera. and then the zero fat kind of post-workout, just like in a shake again, or like another like almost zero fat product at all. I think that that's a recipe for a lot of females to get stomach issues.
Yeah.
And I actually learned this because we're talking about giving credit before. I learned this a long time ago from John Meadows, from his one of his in-person lectures. Mm-hmm. And he got it from Dr. Eric Serrano, which it was kind of like, and the theory was evolutionarily based. So I was instantly interested, right? Because it was like, well, we weren't really designed to digest like 200 grams of protein or 100 grams like in a 3-hour period with no fat. Like that never would have happened in human history. It's like, that's actually about as basic of an understanding as I need. And he was realistic. He was like, look, we're not doing keto bodybuilding here. Like he was John Meadows' health guy. It's like he was knowing what was going on. He's like, we're using tools such as insulin stuff, which we don't want to get into today. It's like he knew, but he would just say like, even having 5 to 10 grams of fat around these times will really optimize digestion compared to having zero, which it's like not much has zero fat. So it's not a huge concern because even chicken breast and stuff is not like zero fat at all.
No.
But because we were talking about that morning client who like, sometimes if I have a busy day, I literally do actually drink my first 3 meals technically. That's not often and it's not preferred. But, you know, like this weekend, it's like I had to train, go to a crazy, like our 4-year anniversary sale at the stores. It's like, I literally need to drink this. So I'm careful to make sure that I'm having, you know, maybe some black seed oil or my omegas or something around this training window that has
MCT
a little bit
of oil. Perfect opportunity to insert. MCT oil is fucking huge in this situation.
Great. Yeah.
So I particularly like to use two sources here. I also will never go, typically I would never go anyone without fats too as well. Just from the perspective of, I like to have a more stable glucose response out of things, stable insulin response out of things. So even if it's just 5 extra grams of coconut oil, I'll do it. And the actual fat source actually matters to people. A lot of people try to put olive oil or something in there. It's not going to do you any good in this situation. You should be using, I say there's two sources here that I particularly like to use, coconut oil and MCT oil. Reason why is they're both MCTs. So they're medium chain triglycerides. So they're actually used as energy for your workout. So they're not
going to store them as body fat or be utilized in that sense.
Yeah, they're going to be utilized as energy during your workout. So it's so you're not going to be just having in fats into your plan there. But
I can honestly, and I'll just say this, I do have athletes that I don't put fats in pre-training in the morning. I do for sure. Yeah. I do both.
Now I have a caveat too to what Braden said. I am a big proponent, like I said, of I night load them with carbs. So in terms of that, that still counts as their macros the day previous. So that means that they got to make those carbs up somewhere, right? And obviously we want to keep it to the peri-workout window, and you said it kind of right and you mentioned it slightly. So I will load kind of heavy in that intra-workout area if they're in the morning. Obviously I have programmed anywhere from 30 grams of carbs intra to upwards to 120. Just depends on how hard the person trains and how hard they go through nutrients and what they need to actually uphold performance throughout that process. Like you said, progress is the king here. So whatever they need to progress is what I have to do. So I've done it that large. You don't need to go that large. I find really for a lot of people, at least regular people training, 50 grams, 30 to 50 grams, you'll be money. But for some of my bigger guys, I've definitely programmed in 90 plus grams of carbs intra-workout. I myself have consumed 120 grams intra-workout for quite a few months. It was very uncomfortable, but you know, it had to be done. And my performance was fucking nuts at that point. So in morning training, I will hit them with that heavy intra. And then I will hit them with a big time. I'll shuffle more carbs into that first solid meal in the morning. And then I'll also hit them with, usually I have macros based out for a lot of people, like macros per meal. Peri-workout, I handle nutrition specifically. So I like to tell them what sources to use. At least I used to do amounts, but for a lot of people, I like to give a bit more variety with things. That third meal though, after that second meal after the post-workout. So it's intra, post-workout, meal after post-workout. That meal after post-workout, I will shuffle in those carbs that are in that night load into that meal. because it has to be utilized. It's more likely it's going to be utilized better there. In that specific case too, I will also add in some sort of supplementation there to also aid that insulin response and that glucose uptake there. So I would more so go with something like a glucose by Revive. I would Morpho Drive by Morphogen, or even just if someone is on a budget, obviously
Berberine, Chromium.
Obviously you could do Berberine, and even a classic thing that a lot of people actually don't even take it to account is using cinnamon.
Yeah.
Like straight, like I put it in
Ceylon cinnamon though.
Yes. Yes. So I tell people to put that on their pre and post workout meals all the time. I'm like, hey, it's kind of just a nice little ease that no one really knows about, and it's quick and easy, and a lot of people like the taste of cinnamon, so it kind of just helps. And then the rest of the day, I'm very much in the same boat as Dylan here. What Dylan said, I am fruit and veggie only. This is something that I learned from Mark and working with Mark. I've noticed my body composition dramatically change when I stopped doing regular carbs, like just straight up like simple carbs in my, unless it's needed, right? There's a 280 pound bodybuilder. That's absolutely a case where, hey, we're going to have to get, You're going to have to get in rice.
You're either eating 12 bananas and fucking six tubs of blueberries.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have some rice, my man.
But for a lot of Gen Pop people, just from an antioxidant standpoint, and I guess this is kind of a micronutrient standpoint, which I said we want to get into, but just from getting in overall nutrients, fill those carbs with fruits and veggies. I swear to you, you're going to feel way better. Your inflammation is going to go down. And you're just going to be processing things overall a lot better throughout the day. You're going to get more of a slow release of everything rather than these spikes throughout the day. Cause that's what we're trying to reduce, right? So we're trying to reduce these ups and downs. A lot of people, this is what they do all day, is it ups in the morning at breakfast, then it comes crashing down near lunch, and then they spike it up again at lunch, and then they don't eat till dinner and spikes down again. They have these three meals where you're getting these massive spikes. So along with that, I would say then frequency along with that is I like to have anywhere from 5 to 6 meals a day. 6 meals if you're really pushing carbs really, really hard. If you're in a good solid position, I say 5 meals just from a digestive standpoint, a muscle protein synthesis standpoint, and then from just overall kind of balance throughout the day, it kind of keeps everything going pretty well.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I sort of do my meal quantity in a day, let's say, based on what the person's total protein intake is a little bit more.
Yes, so, that's what I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it depends on, and also the digestion. So for instance, I've been playing with this. I like that we were talking about this. So I got into a position where, and I think this is important for coaches to understand, right? So about a year ago, I wasn't as prevalent on nutrient timing as I am now. And that's because I've had, maybe even 2 years ago, but I've had a lot of influences since. It started off with when I hired Justin to coach me. And not that I had heard, that was not a foreign concept at all. I just never felt it that useful to me per se, let's say. Yep. So but then I started just trying with clients more, and I was like, oh, but it's useful to a lot of people. And then as I got to see it for myself, on myself, over a long enough period of time, I was like, okay, actually, I can see the difference. Now, it is interesting because it's super individual. So I try to pay attention to like people's digestion, what they feel good on. Because for instance,
100%.
This, and my coach is here right now, so this is going to be really fun. So Braden, I used to be able to talk about you when you weren't here, and now you're here. But anyway, so Braden has me eating like lots of carbs and while around my training, and I do like that, and I prefer them to go there. However, I do notice on the days that I screw up my diet, which I tell Braden basically is 1 to 2 days every other week, or sometimes week, depending on my other businesses. And by screw up my diet, I don't mean the total macro. I mean going from 5 meals to 4 or sometimes 3, basically, because I just have to revert back a few steps because like I just have other responsibilities.
Can I ask a question? How much protein are you eating at this moment?
275.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of protein in 4 meals.
Yes, and I do 5, which is fine. Now, I will say this anecdotally. So there's a, because I want to talk about me a little bit, like individually using this as like maybe a teaching moment.
Yep.
So from the time I was about 8 years old, So you guys say that's a lot of protein per meal. And when I got into the fitness industry being like this overweight farm kid, and I started realizing, like measuring out what 40, 50 grams of protein was, I was like, I've been eating this since I was 6 years old, like three times a day. This is pitiful. What do you mean? You can't digest 40 grams of protein. This is for children, this meal. And I still kind of feel that way. Like, you know, when I look at 50 grams of protein, I'm like, man, I'm eating more than half of that first meal raw. You know, like, I'm not, all half of that meal is coming from raw organ tissue. So it's not hard for me to get that much protein at all. Like, I viewed that as like a side thing. So anyway, on the days where I end up having to being a little bit busier, I end up having to get in because my sleep gets sacrificed. So then I have to catch up on sleep. So then there's just less time to eat a bigger meal. So it's not really that anything's changing. It's that I can't wake up at 6 a.m. I have to push it back to 7:30 and I have to train at 8:30. So I end up like this morning, because I knew that I was having a sale all weekend, I had 75 grams of carbs instead of 125. And I felt significantly better than normal. And every time that I eat a little bit less pre, I actually have my best workouts. And I will say this also, for me individually, a 50 gram protein meal and a 125 gram carb meal with like 10 grams of fat, to a lot of people is like a large quantity of food volume, even if you're eating clean, right? So it's like, oh, I understand why you wouldn't want more than that in a meal, but like, especially using a tool like insulin, it's like, man, and after training, I'm way hungrier than before. I could mow my first and second meal post-training and train fasted if I really wanted to, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's something where you were actually very close. Like, I think I was under, the point is I came to the middle, because I wasn't doing barely anything. And then talking through Justin, learning and re-amalgamating myself with a new circle, and Anthony doing it, and then being coached by Braden, it was like, okay, then I started to deploy it to my clients in different strategies. And to be honest, the more muscle a person has, the stronger they are, and the harder they train, the more they can intake around training.
Yes.
This is just the way it is. Yep. Almost 100%. In unison of digestion. Like, those people can just digest more food faster because they have more tissue to metabolize that food or assimilate that food. And that makes perfect sense. And I'm not that big of a human being, you know, like at all. So it's like, well, it makes sense why, like, I wouldn't handle, let's say, 300 carbs pre-workout as like a person that maybe you have, you know, like that guy that's eating like six bagels or something you said. And it's like, that's not even the pre-training meal. That's just the warm-up meal to the pre-training meal. So everyone is a little bit different, you know? So I'm trying to find, I think that most people, the ranges that I kind of come up with, I have people that are like 30 to 40% carbs around training for like lifestyle-ish people that, you know, that's because I'm cautious not to take too much away at the other times of their day.
Yes.
Like, imagine this as a client scenario. You're a female who, you know, is a nurse, has two kids. You train early in the morning like that. You work a hell job on your feet all day. And your macro, but you're not a big female. So maybe you can only eat 2,300 at probably most, or 2,000 calories in a day to like maintain a nice physique that you're proud of. And you mow 1,200 of that or 1,300 of that by the time, you know, it's 11 a.m.
Yeah.
And then you go home and you're making your two kids like spaghetti and meat sauce and all this stuff. And you've had a hell day, you did about 14,000 steps. It's going to be difficult for you over time, I think, to really maintain that type of lifestyle where you're eating like broccoli. Better watch that.
I have someone who is a nurse. I actually posted her yesterday. And actually did have her on. I actually like to, this is my personal preference, I like to balance anywhere from 50% to 75% of people. 75% will be my bodybuilders. If you are wanting to get the absolute most out of your physique, I will push around 70 to 75% of your carbs within that window. I'm very aggressive.
Caveat. Unless you're a huge bodybuilder that needs huge amount of
nutrition.
Imagine this, hypothetically, just imagine this. Imagine eating 1,000 grams of carbs a day and trying to put 750 grams of carbs around your training window.
But at that point, I'm assuming that you're deploying insulin though to aid in that.
I still wouldn't do it. Tell you right now, I'm not putting 750 grams of carbs around the training window.
Oh, no, no, I'm saying, no, I'm saying at that point, though, I'm saying at that point, you're probably deploying insulin, though,
either at other times in the day.
Yes, more than like other meals. Whether it's, there's a lot of people that shit on Lantus. I don't mind it. I do prefer frequent dosing in Humalog, but it's not necessary for a lot of people, but we'll get into that another time.
Yeah. So I think in that case, obviously in those cases, you're going to have to. There's a point to where you're going to get that kickback from it. I find that it's around when you get to that like 500 plus gram carb amount.
I would agree with you big time. There's a good amount of people that can handle like 65 that are competitive athletes or serious athletes that can handle 65 to 75% of carbs around a window for sure. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But so I think Dylan has a really good point too with more lifestyle based people.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people, and just basically the way society has evolved over time, food a lot of times becomes a reward system. And for some reason, there's that connection between eating carbs. And if somebody's not eating carbs in a meal, they feel like they're starving or dieting. I don't know, but you know what I mean? So even if they're eating 300 grams of carbs a day and 250 of them are around the training window, but they have three meals that are no carbs, they just feel like they're starving. And I feel like that's not necessarily... No. Super necessary if this is just a 35-year-old mom that's trying to just be a little bit healthier. You can separate the carbs, whether it's 20 grams per meal with a little bit of rice or a little bit of fruit or whatever, and then they at least have some volume in their meal and that kind of thing.
Well, I think this is where even Dylan's point come in too, right? Of what is humans' evolutionary thing is to have fruit a lot. Yeah. And I bet you're gonna benefit even if you don't program. Like if you only program 40%, but your 60% is coming from whole food sources and really good, nutritious whole food sources, I bet your bottom dollar that physique still changes a good amount. Like as much as we say,
lots.
As much as for we sure. bias, as much as we want to bias that window for performance base, if they are still crushing performance on that 40% allotment and they're getting in a majority, and I mean, probably the rest of that 60% from... say like fruits and veggies,
yeah,
you can guarantee that person is going to be rapidly changing. And number one, they're not only rapidly going to change, I bet you guys have also seen this, is where you could start to push food even harder in these people because they do start to transform. And then you could start to add in a bit more simple carbs into those meals outside. And overall that just creates a whole trend of life just gets fully better for this person. You have a full buy-in from this client and life is going great for them. And you've totally transformed that how they see food and how they see everything. So here's
another piece to that too that we didn't really talk about and mention. And this is sometimes why I won't put fats necessarily in a early morning training meal if I have some sort of fruit in there, just from the fiber intake, right? That fiber intake is naturally going to slow down the absorption of those carbs and keep it a little more tapered. But fiber is a big one here. And that's a huge one. For overall digestion, which we know impacts the look over the long term for sure. If nutrient, like I'm a big believer in this. Everyone says you are what you eat. I'm a huge believer in you are what you digest, not you are what you eat. And if your digestion is not proper, now you're going to have issues. And fiber plays a massive role in digestion. And we have to look at the difference between soluble and insoluble, right? Well, what if fruit and most berries contain that a lot of like other foods that are fiber ridden don't? It's the difference between soluble and insoluble. So if you have somebody eating fruits more frequently now, they're probably getting a good amount of insoluble fiber and digestion may improve. Overall outlook, the way they feel will improve. And a lot of times with that happening, so does improvements in so does performance in the overall look.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, to talk to both your points, I think that when people, what I would do is I try to tell people, like if I was giving like a very pragmatic boil down of this, place your goal and your target of like nutrient timing, because we've basically all agreed upon the fact that it's pretty important. And it's probably pretty important to bias some more carbohydrates around training. How much is going to depend on how much you're eating in a day and what your appetite and food relationship is like, and then what your general life and or physical goals are. So taking those things to account, it's like, hey, if I'm more like, like a regular lifestyle type of person, It's like maybe, you know, 30 to 50% is a more realistic amount that leaves me some in the other times of the day to enjoy with my family. Once in a while, go for a coffee with my mom and have a biscuit, whatever it is, right? Versus like if you're the competitive athlete who should only be caring about, you know, you got your first national show. It's like you probably should care about your physique because you put a lot of money and time and effort into it. Maybe it does make sense, you know, if they're not eating too many carbohydrates, that a lot of the carbohydrates go around the training.
For sure.
Lastly, I just want to add, I guess I was speaking to a specific situation. Our audience is a lot of this situation potentially. So specifically when I said the no fats around training, because I coach way more females than I do males. So my bias is always that, if that makes sense. Like I forget that that's my bias because I'm always speaking to their physiology, I think, for them in a sense, where a females generally can eat less. So like in to maintain any sort of phase, whether that's a maintenance phase or a massing phase or a lean phase, they're going to eat less than their male counterparts.
Yeah.
Well, that means there's less opportunity for micronutrient spamming because there's just less opportunity to get those calories in that will contain said micronutrients. So that's a problem. The second problem is a lot of times I see in body bikini and the smaller divisions, females have to diet down to pretty scary low levels of fat. And it's like, hey, whatever, I'm kind of on the team that like you decide what we want to do and whatever's necessary for you to win based on the goal that you have and hey, where we see this point, I'm fine with it. However, you can avoid a big problem that I see, which is how many females do we know that do a harsh prep and get a stomach problem after, digestionary problem after? Almost all. Well, if you look at a lot of the plans they were on, heavy aminos and low osmosity carbs, so like HBCDs and, you know, carb powders in the training. And especially if they're these morning hardworking women, which the women that are attracted to preps, it's like these night shift nurses and a bunch of these type of jobs, like all my clients that have prepped all do these, they're hardworking people. That's why they can take on a lot of stuff. Prep's a lot of work. So they're drawn to these things of challenge. And it's like, okay, so they're getting up crazy early in the morning and now they have all these aminos, and then their protein's usually cranked really high. It's like, that's going to turn to ammonia in the stomach. Mm-hmm. All those extra EAAs, and that's going to be a problem for your nitrogen, your urea. It's going to cause real havoc, honestly. And usually about the length of the prep is about how long it takes to, you know, we see like all these functional stuff like SIBO and you know, leaky gut. That takes about the length of a prep. And that's usually when those behaviors start. So I've noticed a pattern that like, hey, almost every time a female does these dieting strategies, they end up with a problem unless they're just very genetically resilient. So it's something to be careful of. And by the way, if I was having a female diet down to what I would, let's say 35 grams of fat, and I've, you know, we can talk about why you should maybe have to go lower or not go that low at all. I'm kind of on both teams, but I get it.
Yeah.
Meaning if it's, I'm thinking of someone who's winning, right? Well, if they have 35 grams of fat over four meals, I'm not going to put 0-0 and then split the other fats up. I'm going to try to give them some around that train, even 5 to 7 or 8 grams, just so that they can digest that protein a little bit easier. And then I'll split the rest up over their other meals. Right. So it's like, yeah, the total is low and that's fair enough, but at least it's not 0 or 1 gram around all of their training meal, which happen to contain a large amount of the carbohydrates and protein that they're going to take in the day.
So, right? So
but like, and I agree with you huge time. I'm big on both camps. I mean, I think it's very important to keep dietary fats as high as you possibly can throughout a contest prep. However, you're going to get to a point, especially with the more elite kind of upper echelon bikini competitors and stuff, that a lot, and don't get me wrong, there's also a lot who don't require that extreme, but there is a lot who do. And a lot of these people, you'll see their end of their preps are minimal fats and minimal carbs and minimal protein. Like realistically, you know what I mean? Like when you say going to the depths that you need to win, sometimes it looks like that for people. And I've put girls on stage that are basically eating nothing all day on stage day. And it's literally just protein. Whereas on the flip side, I've done both, and that just goes down to what you're saying. Sometimes you got to do what you do to win, but there will always be the conversation. And I think we all hold the same frame of mind here in that I'm going to tell you what this can possibly look like and what it can possibly do to you. Because the first thing I want you to know is that this is going to fuck you up. And then the second thing I want you to know is there is a map and a plan of action to come out of this that you need to follow. And if you don't, you are going to be fucked up. And that's where a lot of people go wrong. But no, I agree with you a million times over, Dale. I do 100% big time.
I also have a caveat with females, and this comes around with frequency of meals. A lot of mine, at least most of mine, have come with me with some sort of hormonal dysfunction. And that's majority of my female clients. And the one way that I go about helping them, obviously, is what you got to do is you got to push fats a little higher than normal.
Yeah.
So I could bias anywhere from, I mean, I've gone up to some people up to 90 grams of fat on a rest day. Like I've gone up to 100 grams of fat for a female on a rest day. Like at moments.
I have like 10 people on that right now.
Yeah. Me too. So I've done it. So my meal frequency also goes down into, hey, how much fats are you taking in throughout the day? Because you have to, like, this is a big component, because this is also where a lot of issues with gut motility and things come from too, as well, is a lot of people don't realize what they're eating, and these things have a ton of fat in it. It just stays in there.
Yeah.
It just sticks in there. So this is where I see a lot of things. So if you choose like at least the right sources, you could typically digest it pretty well. Like I see a lot of people digest olive oil. You guys probably all seen the olive oil, macinut oils, avocado oils, like these things, people can really start to churn through pretty easily and still have like that two to three hour in between meals type frequency if they really wanted to. But I find when you're pushing those like 90, 100 gram fat days, you really have to be more cautious over how many meals you're having, because you really don't want to get caught having four meals with not only, it's like with how many fats you have to add in there, not only from like animal protein, but also just how much added fat.
Well, there's another part of that, right? And I think this is something that's important to know. Anytime you add a large amount of fats to a meal, it's going to slow down the uptake of the other nutrients, right? So you're talking about a meal that is just chicken and rice, and maybe we're saying 200 grams of rice with 7 ounces of chicken. Okay, great. You ingest that. That's going to be utilized fairly quickly and digested fairly quickly, and you're probably going to get a blood sugar spike, and then it's going to taper down. Well, now you ingest, we'll say 15 grams of fat from olive oil added to that meal. Those blood sugars are going to very, very slowly come up here, but they're also going to stay sustained for a longer period of time. So I think this is where it becomes a little more complex doing our jobs, right? Like people think it's simply black and white, write something on paper and go eat. But like, if I'm trying to, if you have consistently high blood glucose levels, but I also know that you need energy substrates to perform at a high level that I want you, I need to be able to feed you carbs. But at the same time, I need to be able to keep your blood sugars in range so that kind of meal to meal, you're not just stacking elevated blood sugar levels on elevated blood sugar levels, and you're finishing the day with a blood glucose of 6 or 120, you know what I mean? Versus having it consistently be in a good spot. And I think that's where that would go to a different conversation too, if you're talking the big bodybuilders and utilization of insulin. But it's just something to be aware of too, right? Because like you said, if you have a female eating 100 grams of fat on a rest day, but she's also ingesting 200 grams of carbs on this day or 150 grams of carbs on this day, what is her blood sugars doing, right? Because you might almost have to make some changes based on that too. Because if on a rest day where she's not actually training and she consistently has elevated blood sugars because the fats are keeping her blood sugars in a high place, we have to play around with things, right? It might be bringing the fats down or timing them differently and having a couple meals that are lower fat with carbs and then having a couple meals that are higher fat. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer with that. I just think it's understanding people, and that's what we have to do as coaches, right? And understanding how people actually function on an individual basis.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. So I was creating a new training program for a client, and Dylan was looking over it for me. And I asked him about how to set up the nutrition, and I kind of gave him my opinion. He gave me his, and I was kind of shocked by what his recommendations were, to truly be honest.
Let me guess. Raw heart, raw organ, liver.
Yeah, raw testicles. That was the one. That was exactly it. No. What it was is we actually, because we're implementing an AMPK phase type thing. Don't listen to me, because I'm still learning this stuff. So I still get approval from people before I send out these types of programs. But We were talking about how to set up nutrition, and since it's so glycolic, we decided to lower the fats, right? Because it would impede what needs to be there for performance. And then, and then Dylan kind of shocked me when he was like, her carbs are going to be a lot lower on rest days. And I was like, well, that's a lot lower. And so I'm excited to see how this experiment goes, but I mean, it's actually kind of a good thing because I started tracking her blood glucose this week. And her blood glucose after her rest days was in like the 90s. And so,
man, I can speak to that. There's sometimes a lot of people have all these strategies for fixing blood glucose and stuff. And something that I've actually find to work very, 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 very well, that is not a super complex thing, on training days, leave training days the way you normally do it would. But then on rest days, just literally bias all of your energy from fats and remove carbs. I have some people who eat zero carbs on rest days, and they're people who are eating 3,500 calories on training days with 500, 600 grams of carbs.
So when I started, right? so when I started to get to know Dylan, this is a good backstory. Dylan actually, because I had an insulin resistance case, and Dylan actually started to help me reverse this case. And now, I mean, we're using metformin, so there was a drug in play in accordance to it. But Dylan was like, yo, you should implement.
Huge fan of metformin, by the way. Huge fan.
Yes, absolutely. I'm also a huge fan. Even though they just came out with a study saying, like, if you take it under 40. Fertile. What?
The infertility study?
Yeah, the fertility study that they just released. I was like, okay, tell that to all the bodybuilders who have had children with.
Yeah, it's a little shaky for me. Yeah, but anyway, continue on.
But so Dylan was like, yo, you should try fasting with him. Now, I don't recommend fasting without a purpose. A lot of people do fasting without a purpose, and I think that that is a great way to do more harm than good. These are planned out more so intermittent fasting here. Like Dylan and I were chatting about 24-hour fast here to reverse a really heavily insulin case. Yeah. Because this insulin resistance case had a insulin of 25, I believe, fasted insulin of 25. And so luckily his doctor was able to prescribe him metformin, which helped his BG get down there. But we implemented a few fasting days and we started to really start to see his blood glucose start to trend back down. And he was consistently into the 80s when we had finished coaching. So it was great to see that his blood glucose started to really level out, and he started slowly dropping weight, because once you level that blood glucose out, the body starts to become better at processing nutrients, and the life goes around. So
just put a massive asterisk beside that though, because I don't want all my fucking clients to start doing intermittent fasting, please.
Well, I said if you do it without a purpose.
I know, I'm just bugging you. But it actually
is pretty funny, because I'll talk about it, because I'll take a little bit more of the heat. I'm used to it.
It's not even heat. You know what? There's actually lots of application too in terms of gut dysfunction cases of where it can be beneficial. Huge time. I don't disagree at all.
But I'm about to make your disagreeable side maybe come out. So you should listen.
Okay.
So I do lots of weird shit with dieting that I don't talk about because I'm just too old to argue with people on the internet about stuff they have no experience in.
So let's fucking argue on the internet right now.
Yeah. So I actually, if I was working, and by the way, this doesn't happen in the field very often because it just doesn't work out. But play with me abstractly. If I had you as a client, let's play that game. If I had you as a client, as your National Braden client, like, you know, like full on. Bodybuilding.
I thought you were talking about me. No, I'm not cool enough.
Sorry, talking about Braden.
It's okay. I get it.
Even where the extremes of this, I might play with it. Might. Let's say we were starting dieting for a show, and tools went in. So tools were in. Now we're dieting, however you want to look at that, pushing up food, etc. Whenever we wanted to stop pushing food, and start removing food. Especially if you had shown any signs of stomach waistline being a problem, or BG, or sleep, or energy, or gym performance, I might ask you to try not eating one day instead of dieting. Instead of adjusting your calories, I might just say there's no eating on Sunday. Don't be a pussy. And it's funny because I've thrown this at bodybuilders who are always very hardcore, and it's like, what? You want me not to eat? What if I die?
I don't disagree with this because
it's like, what do you mean, what if you die? You think
here's the way I look at this, and let me just dig into this because I think I know where you're going with this, and I'm not going to disagree with it because, in a sense, you've just put them into a 500 calorie deficit or whatever per day, essentially, right?
Yep.
You eat 3,000 calories a day, and you want to give a hard deficit, so a 10% pull would be bringing them down to fucking 2,700 calories. Okay, well, maybe we're going harder and we're going 500 calories. Well, that's 3,500 calories across a week. You fast for one 24-hour period, you've just hit the same deficit, right?
Yeah, and I believe, though, so yes, but, so, you know, and by the way, I'm not preaching about this for, like, building maximum muscle, but you also have to take in the whole picture. So the way that I look about this, though, is like, well, if it's done in a rest day, and I might even do a protein modified fast where I have some protein and small amount of fat in the morning. So like maybe there's some playing with this, but my idea would be to watch your sleep, watch your BG, watch your sex drive, watch a lot of things actually. And what I found that in the past, regardless of the level of client, that if they can adhere to it without psychological problems, some people, it's just their relationship with food is not where it needs to be to do this without degenerating them. So I'll never make a choice that degenerates something else worse. And I think that you would get the same benefits of dieting through the whole week. And a lot of times your digestion and your training pumps and everything in your stomach, everything is going to be better than what it would have been just from reducing the same amount of calories. And I'm not saying all the time, mm-hmm. but I'm saying if there was some reasons, mm-hmm. like one of those things, BG, sleep, and because those are not little things. You know what I mean? Like saying like, oh, it's just a little sleep difference. The food's more important than that. Really? Oh, it's just my BG's just kind of fucked all day, you know, but no big deal. I'll just not do the fasting and not potentially fix this and just keep eating and see how that goes. It's like, well, I don't know. Like, that's a pretty low level of analysis to me. Because if I can use a tool and fix something, here's the fun thing. And then everyone goes, oh, so you're going to be fasting the whole time? No. The beauty of it is if you learn how to do a 36 hour fast, or longer, but I wouldn't apply any longer than that in the field, probably with what we're talking about. If you do that, oftentimes you do it two or three times and their BG is actually fixed now, even if you take the fast away. And I know that sounds very strange, but I've seen it like a lot of times. Like
I don't think it's strange.
50 times, actually. And it's like, well, why is that? And I'm not sure. And actually one of my mentors, William Grazione, even kind of, I was happy because I went through this when I was like 24 years old, and I got a lot of trash talking about it when I was playing with it. And then like maybe a year ago, William Grazione tried a little experiment with himself. And he was like, yeah, I actually feel better with almost the exact strategy that I just laid out. And so I think it's a tool that it's weird, right? It's kind of like when before the call, you were like, I hate why everyone's talking about hormones because this is the problem. That's what happened to fasting.
Yeah.
Or like apple cider vinegar. Like I use that thing all the time in functional. It's actually very good for producing pH polarity and stomach acids. But because we've ruined it on social media where it's like, you either hate apple cider vinegar because you're on that team, because I'm just do the basics. That's it. Nothing else. No thinking, just barbells and squats. Or you're on the team that's like, well, everything has to be complicated and all the time for no reason.
Take the betaine HCL, bro. What are you doing? Why are you taking apple cider vinegar?
Just what? But really, you know, it's like we're at the point where everything has to be in extreme polarity. It's And I don't know what to do about that sometimes, you guys, because people will message me stuff sometimes, and I'm like, I don't know how to answer this question because it lacks so much context and thought.
Well, tell me how many times you've started working with an individual and they take lemon and apple cider vinegar first thing in the morning and they don't even know what it does.
My point, you know what I mean?
That's like, what I mean. And then I'm like, we got to pull that. And they're like, well, it makes me feel good. And I'm like, well, probably you just think that because you've been doing it for a year and a half because you read it on somebody's post a year and a half ago and you took it once and you might've been in a situation at that point in time that you actually needed more stomach acidity. And so
now you have too much.
Digested it and now you have too much and we pull it out and you actually feel better.
Correct. That was the point I was trying to make. I was getting ranty, but it's like, hey, not everything has to be all one way all the time. There's usually these tools that we know about. The reason they exist is because they actually have some value. So for instance, I'll talk about something, a tool I never use, because I'm talking about nutrition timing. I would never time like a physique development diet to have a keto based diet, let's say.
Fuck no.
Right. However, and I don't really even like it for general, almost anything. However, where its utility shines, it's the only thing that actually has utility. So it's pretty valuable. It's just a different tool because you use it very infrequently. But when you need it, properly done, it's the only thing that will get the job done almost.
For sure.
So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, well, we don't have to crap on it. We don't have to just use it like some magic. It's just we use it when
they're in the toolbox for a reason.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So nothing should be demonized.
On a needs basis.
Yes. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Sorry, I'm getting off this, but it's the same thing with any type of supplement and everything. It's a needs basis. It's supposed to be used for a specific point of time. And then eventually you hopefully.
Hey, I have to rant on this actually a little bit because.
Oh God, here we go.
What you got? Just the way you framed it, like needs based. And I thought, oh yeah, okay, well, needs based coaching. What's continually hurting my feelings more and more is that there is almost, I feel very alone actually. Like I expanded my social circle and put all these people up on pedestals to find out that like, oh, they actually don't even do needs-based coaching. They just talk about doing needs-based coaching.
Yep.
And that it's like, well, what do we do about that? You know, it feels like you're very, it was like hard for me to accept. It was like, what the hell? And this has been happening a lot where it's like people make protocols up and they just, that's just kind of what they do. There's no like, well, how do you, you know, like all this conversation we had about how to structure a person's diet. Like, well, what do they do? What job do they do? And we're giving examples because of how that would make things change. To find out that that's not really going on at the rate that it should be for people's success is just not a nice thing. You know, it's like we need to start being a little bit less polarizing about all this shit. So that stops happening and people start helping people that are in front of them now. You know, and not like looking at those people as something to get through to get somewhere else. Well, it's like to that person who gave you that money, it's very important what you're doing. You know, like regardless of if you're a lifestyle client, a competitor, a health case, like to that person, it's very important. So you should treat it that way.
It goes back to the conversation we had before we started recording here. And like SIBO protocols. For most, that's going to be a very, very needs-based application of foods, supplements, etc. But if you're a coach who just has a protocol written out on paper and that's what you send to every SIBO client that you're working with, is that really needs-based coaching?
No, it's not. It's not. It's
that's
not
what true. I mean. And I know for a fact, because we've had conversations about this, you get pissed by this stuff. So do I, right? Just like if you go to a very simple level of that, well, these fucking cookie cutter diets, no different. Same shit. That ain't needs based. There's none of that. And it's pretty sad. It is pretty sad because as a coach, we essentially have, okay, sure, we have many jobs, but realistically we have one job and our job is to service the hell out of our athletes and accomplish a goal. And a lot of times the quantity basically masks the quality of the work. And that's not okay in this industry.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we're working to fix that anyway. But
that's why
that's the goal. Slowly but surely.
That's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we do, because we know now. And I mean, I've been learning this, right? Because I've probably been through the phase too, where I think the things I like, I apply to like clients, but now
well, that kind of happens. We all have our
bodies. Yeah. Well, and hey,
but it's changing.
I'll be the first.
But it's changing more as the more I've become friends with Dylan, the more that's actually changed. Like,
well, like here's the thing. I'll be the first to admit that my coaching over the years has grown. And I have been the guy. When I was first starting coaching, I had a coach basically give me apple cider vinegar, lemon and lime in the morning with a little bit of salt. And I fucking felt great when I did this. So I thought this was some big secret, holy grail. And I started doing it with people. And then I actually became more and more educated and realized what these particular items were doing, what they should be used for. And at that point, I changed the way I was applying their usage into places where they were needed, right? And I think we have to grow as coaches, because if you have the same philosophies from day one through year 18, you're fucking left behind. You're clearly not learning through those years, and you're not doing your own finger quote studies when you're coaching to understand how you apply things, right? And I think that's a very, very, I think that highlights the problem that we're seeing in the industry is people don't actually know how to utilize things. They just see them put on paper and try to do it.
Before we get into another rant, let's
it's all good. We can continue back to I like where we're heading with the nutrient timing thing though, in terms of meal frequency. Because I have a couple points on that I think are valuable. And one thing I actually pulled up a study for earlier, because it's something that I have read on before. So there's two things. One of them I didn't pull up a study for, but we probably could. If somebody's in a caloric deficit or in a dieting phase, the increased meal frequency, given that protein is adequate across meals, is going to hold on to more muscle mass. And I think that's, I don't know if you guys agree or disagree or you want to challenge me on that, but increased meal frequency during a diet phase when calories are decreased and having a consistent amount of protein, given that that amount of protein is adequate throughout the day, will decrease your catabolism and hold on to more muscle through that diet. And secondly, the other one is that increased meal frequency actually has an effect on cholesterol levels and some health markers. So obviously when you look at fasting insulin and stuff like that, there's a lot of things that can come into play with that. But specifically, I know that increased meal frequency can actually have a positive effect on cholesterols, and decreased meal frequency can have a negative effect on cholesterols. So going back to the intermittent fasting conversation where everyone thought this was the most brilliant thing in the world for health all the time around the clock. Well, I mean, it's a stressor too, right? So if that's all you ever do is fast and you fast for long periods of time, get some blood work done. Let's look at it. I guarantee you, it ain't going to be all fun and games. Like
cortisol is going to be shit. And you 100%. Know, even though I use this as a tool, I know it's flaws, but yep. Every tool has advantages. And
but you're also not using it for months at a time. Like you said, you're specifically applying based on a need.
Like a quick 1 to 3 week dart. And if it doesn't work, yeah. I'm going to stop using it because the feedback is that it's not working. So yeah. I'm not going to continue to use it. I'll try something else.
And it also, you also probably have different methods to get to the same goal.
100%. It's like, exactly. I just decided this is one of the 4 or 5 roads that I want to take and here's why. And then you deploy a strategy.
Yep.
So Brady, do you think, I have a question on that. And I'm not just, cause like, I know the study you're referencing.
Yeah.
With someone like me, let's say we had me and a clone of me and you were going to diet me down to like brutal levels of calories, which I already know from getting lean in the past that I have to diet pretty hard to get like shredded.
Yeah.
And where my protein is now, if I intook that over 4 meals or 5, do you actually believe that at 100 and like probably 70 pounds or 168 pounds where I would end up eating the protein I'm eating, that I would lose muscle eating 5 meals a day versus 4, which would be like 5 meals of 55 grams of protein or something like that per day, or 4 meals of 68 protein.
No, I don't. But I think you would if you were eating 2 a day.
I do 2. So you kind of agree that there is
one. You could do one.
No. Yeah, but I'm agreeing with that. So like there is a point. I think actually 3 would make a difference. With my,
I do too.
Yes.
4 to 6. I don't think 4 to 6 would make a big difference. Yeah. I think 6 to 3, 5 to 3, 4 to 3. Would make a difference because the time that you're actually fasting for in those scenarios is going to be too long where you haven't spiked that muscle protein synthesis, which stems into the final point I was going to make, that if you are trying to build muscle, there's only like, if you have a, let's say an empty tank and a full tank, you're thinking of a car gas meter and you're thinking of muscle protein synthesis. You can't hit the gas with 300 grams of protein in one serving and that meter is going to start spinning and just keep going and keep going and keep going. Once you're full, you're full. So once you maximize muscle protein synthesis, you've kind of maximized it. And the goal when you're trying to build lean tissue should be to maximize that as many times a day as you can. You know what I mean? While having the ability to, and does that mean you want to sip on amino acids all day and drink a protein shake all day? No, because you need to also let that come down to maximize it again. Yep. Right. So it's that there's push and pull, and that's kind of my sweet spot. I like 4 to 6 meals. I usually will not program 3 meals for a person. I might program 3 meals and a snack, but the snack is a fucking whole protein, whole food meal. You know what I mean? Like, I don't refer to them as snacks. I refer to them as meal 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I see.
So that's kind of the when I look at meal frequency, I'm 4 to 6 all the time. Even if I have a lifestyle client who's a 40-year-old, 45-year-old, 50-year-old mom who's only been eating 2 meals or whatever, and she lives a normal life for the last 50 years, I might not do it off the bat if she's been eating 2 meals. I might increase it to 3 and then increase it to 4. But
I think there's 4 also.
Here's the other thing too, right? And I think this is an important thing to speak to. And there's a lot of people who have a tough time when you first start eating with them, eating frequent meals throughout a day. They just, like, their hunger hormones are basically scheduled differently at this point in time. Now, over time, the body adapts. The body is a fascinating vehicle. And if you consistently hold yourself to 4 meal times and you're only used to eating twice, your body is going to start to get hungry at those times. I promise you, I've seen it. I have literally seen it.
I'm that exact example.
I have that exact thing.
And I'm the same way too, because I've done intermittent fasting, and I've actually done it a lot. And I did it last year for a bit just because of my schedule was so fucked. I was like, you know what? I'm going to eat for basically this time to this time, and I'm not going to eat until 2 o'clock.
Did it while I was building my businesses too.
100%. And because it was convenient, and my physique was on the back burner to other goals that I had. If my physique was the number one goal, would I have done that? No, I would not have. But when I did it, know what I realized? I had zero fucking appetite all the time, and I was only hungry during that eating window. And when I started doing it, I was fucking starving for the first half of the day. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I also realized? When I came out of doing that, my appetite was fucked, because I had to force myself to eat those meals at that time. The size of my stomach was insanely small, right? And it's just like there was a lot of things that happened physiologically from the decision that I had made.
I also find that this is also another caveat here to how many meals, right? Like Dylan brought up in the beginning, we talked about protein. How much protein can the person digest, right? Well, normally, if really anybody comes to us, what do we typically see? They're definitely under eating protein.
Yeah.
Like majority of the time, at least for me, even if it's guys, I like to push somewhere around 1.5 grams per pound. Like at least for males, I like to push that high. For females, maybe like 1.2-ish is where
I'm super aggressive with protein.
So you got to think, oh, well, if they're coming to you eating like 120 grams of protein,
you have to titrate it.
You have to titrate that up, which also means your meals can probably, your amount of meals has to be a bit less, it's kind of going to be a bit less at that time. But as you start to titrate more protein, you're obviously going to have to titrate more meals along with that to make sure that their digestion stays there. So that's like the one thing that I always see that
I think that's where I might differ than you guys a little bit, honestly, is, and don't get me wrong, sorry, slightly, because I'm a huge believer.
Yeah. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Don't tell me I'm wrong.
No. I'm not telling you you're wrong. No. I was just saying, I don't necessarily do things the exact same way. So yeah, I am a believer in high protein. And most of my athletes will eat 1 gram to 1.5 grams of protein per pound of body weight. But I also have some athletes who are eating 0.6 or 0.7, and I shift those calories towards carbs for performance benefits based on the individual.
Mm-hmm. I just did that today.
It comes back to me from a digestive standpoint. Some people have a tougher time eating higher levels of protein, but they have no, and carbohydrates are protein sparing. Right. So if you're eating, let's just say hypothetically, 40 grams of protein a meal, and I reduce that to 20, but I drive up carbohydrates, well, you may be holding on to amino acids better yourself and not going catabolic versus if you just it had the equivalent person and you just pulled the protein in that sense.
Yes.
Right. So that's and that's just for myself. Most of the time, I will say I do have people above that gram of protein per pound of body weight. But I do have a good handful of people that I actually have below, and digestive purposes, they just perform better. They feel better. And for me, that comes, that's priority. If you're performing better. So
to me, I guess the way I look at it is something like, I have my idea of what I want and it almost certainly never works out. And then I'm negotiating down to a point that I can get the person to do what their body will do and what they will do. So it's like, I just adjusted a female master's competitor down today to like 0.65, you know, because I was like, I was kind of watching her stomach and stuff. And I was like, I don't like something. And we've had to add betaine. And I'm like, what changed when she got here? And I was like, oh, I drove her protein like way high. Yeah. She was eating, she's only 110 pounds as a master's competitor. And she was eating like 60 grams of protein. And I pushed her to like 140. Yeah. I was like, oh, maybe. So then I backed off a couple weeks ago and
let's try 90.
I went to 100 and then, you know, from 140, and I did the exact same. I didn't change your calories. I put those 40 grams of carbohydrates towards around the training window, actually. And now her physique is responding.
I do this a lot. I do this. I have one SIBO client, and you have to go low protein with those people. Like, you cannot go just for digestive protective purposes. You cannot.
Pretty much, you wouldn't go over a gram per pound. No,
you wouldn't even. I really even want to get close to that during that whole protocol. Honestly, I wouldn't even go that.
I think I've always normally gone like 0.7.
That's where I'm around that 0.6, 0.7. But I find like it's really crazy because I actually had this today, right? I increased a girl's protein like 10 grams. You just think 10 grams is not a lot. But 10 grams could be a lot for someone who does have digestive issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fighting her repop. This week, she balloons up like 3 pounds. And I'm like, okay, what's the only thing I change within this window? And it's just moving up protein 10 grams. So I'm like, okay, maybe she's not ready for my, like, she wants more protein, but her body's telling me no.
Well, naturally, like if you go back to a very simplistic way of thinking, that protein has a higher thermic effect to food, right? Why is that? Because it's harder to digest. So now you're putting something harder to digest into the gut. That's exactly it, right?
Yep.
So now that's a whole nother cool rabbit hole. I like going down is the whole protein conversation. Because also you have people that say, if you eat 300 grams of protein in one sitting, you're not going to absorb it. I would argue that, right? Like it's still going to go through the digestive process. It's just going to take a lot longer because it gets wrapped up in the intestines and whatnot to actually accomplish that goal. And you're still getting a steady, slow release supply of protein. But like we spoke about, you're not maximizing muscle protein synthesis. And it's just kind of an IV drip of protein that you're going to eventually digest.
I don't know what's the largest amount in one sitting I think I've ever had might have been 100. We're going to end on this because it's 9:30 here and I need to finish some check-ins. But I think the most I've ever had was 100 grams in one sitting. And that's a lot.
I ate a 34 ounce tomahawk steak plus two appetizers before. So
fat boy.
Yeah, fat boy. Sitting here.
What was the question? Sorry.
How much protein in one sitting? I'm going to say Dylan had like 150 fucking grams of protein in one sitting.
Way more than that.
He's just like eating all this raw meat. He's like,
Not even from that, but like just thinking, because bro, like if you go, like I've gone to like steak, like those Brazilian steakhouses where they keep bringing them.
I guarantee you,
I probably had like literally 600 grams of
protein. Yeah, me too.
Wild. But you wake up the next day.
Think about this too. Remember the time I told you how much sushi I ate?
Oh yeah, the 100%. Oh dude, you ate a fuck. Yeah, you ate.
That
like
was probably 300 grams of protein in that sitting there.
Just from the sheer calories, you know.
If I think about it, I did have a 36 ounce steak once. I never thought that 130 pound Anthony would be able to eat a 30 ounce steak, but
he did it.
But I honestly think looking back at it, yeah, I probably definitely have had more than 100 grams of protein in one sitting.
100%.
But next day, I swear you wake up so fucking dry. You just feel so tight and you're like, oh, I feel good. You're like, I'm fucking full as a house.
That's home, especially if you're at those Brazilian steakhouses, you get home and there's just veins sticking out of every muscle on your body. Your quads are just
you got the protein and then you've got the fats
and then you got the salt and it's just like the fucking just like, oh
yeah. But then you're also veiny as hell, laying on the couch and you can't move, and it's like, yeah, this is the fat boys that I know.
And then you got edema, then you got edema in your ankles, so everything else looks good. Everything else looks good. And then
you wake up in the morning and you can't even see the scale because your ankles are so swollen.
Literally, you got the upper half looking great, like the upper three quarters of you, but like underneath that knee. Nope, you're fucked. You're like, where's your calves?
You're just saran wrapped onto your leg now.
Well, I mean, we did almost an hour and 40 minutes of a podcast here. So I hope people took some information away. I believe the boys have spots open for coaching. I know I do. No, I'm kidding. If you enjoyed our episode, though, definitely go subscribe to the podcast. Definitely leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple and Spotify. Go follow the boys on Instagram. Go tag us too. We really want to get out these informational ones, and we're going to put more effort into them.
Yeah.
And I really do like this actual shooting from the hip. We didn't directly do topics, but we kind of tried to form it into a way, good conversation, how we like to prioritize things, even though we mainly agree on things, but sometimes we have different nuances that we all had differences with in this whole conversation. So hopefully you guys took a lot away from this one. What?
I was just saying, give us topics. The more topics you give us, the more we can be 100% less tangents, more diving into the good stuff.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I do think there's some utility in going back and forth for people.
Always.
I know myself, but I mean specifically because we kind of did pick a topic, but I thinking of myself anyway, and kind of trying to imagine our audience, they're all people who want to learn. And to think that if you're going to listen to something and learn, it's highly useful to hear like Braden saying how he would specifically protocol this thing and me and you and kind of pulling them all apart. I think it's very useful. I would learn like crazy from that.
I do too. Yeah, yep. You're right.
The amount of information in these is going to be freaking money. We're going to get better at these as we always do. You know, Dylan said it in the beginning. I remember the first time we ever podcasted. Dylan's like, dude, we're going to get so good at this. And I was like, yeah, we are. I was like, we fucking are. So here we are. If you guys enjoyed it, I believe next week is an episode of the Fat Boys. So you'll get a more based podcast. I believe it's Fat Boys. It might be Q&A. I have no clue which one we're on. But on Thursday, big moment for me. To be honest, this is episode 199. Thursday, we'll be releasing episode 200. So be able to release 2.5 years of podcasting, 35,000 plus downloads at this point, to the countless people who have been on the show. It's been quite a journey so far, and it's really just beginning, to truly be honest. It's delved down many paths, and I think we finally have found what's going to be sticking here for the long term. So I appreciate anybody that's listened and things like that. I never thought I'd get to 200 episodes, to truly be honest, let alone like 10. So the fact that we're here definitely means that you guys have put forth effort, and I appreciate everyone who's been on the show. The amount of guests I've had on, including these two guys here, has been tremendous. The support has been tremendous. And honestly, I'm just going to try to get better guests each and every time. But for now, I'm stuck with these two guys here for the time being.
Billy decides to replace us with better guests.
Yeah, so I decide to find someone better. You know, these guys are the replacements. But yeah, so we'll keep giving you guys good content as long as you guys keep loving it. So definitely tag us on your Instagram stories too. If you guys listen, we definitely love when you guys do that. Specifically, I don't get tagged as much. I don't think I'm as cool as the Canadian people over here. So, you know, if you hear
it, you just got to move to Canada, man.
That's move to Canada to get more popular.
I don't know if I feel comfortable giving that advice.
I was just going to say, I feel horrible. I already take that back. The second it was literally leaving my lips.
Didn't like, sound man, good you know coming what? Out of you. Didn't ring good in my ears.
If I'm telling you to go anywhere, it's Texas or Florida, baby.
Yeah. So we appreciate you guys. And thank you for listening to episode 199 of the Ace of Spade podcast with the Fat Boys.